Now, persuasion, negotiation, and influence skills, this is the most important of all because that's all we do all day long is negotiate, persuade, influence, and communicate with other people. That determines the whole quality of our lives is how good we are at it. The number one reason, by the way, the number one reason for failure in America is poor social skills. Poor social skills is 95% of the reason that people are fired from their jobs, not lack of technical skills. Poor social skills is the primary reason for failure in every form of relationship, from the most personal relationship up to the most distant business relationship. So developing good social skills is really important. Your ability to negotiate well on your own behalf is instrumental to your success. So let's talk about negotiating. Number one rule, everything is negotiable. Every price on anything was set by someone. Every circumstance, every detail is negotiable. Just recognize that. Even if they print the sign and the price and they put it on an item at the store, it's negotiable. Somebody printed the price. Somebody picked a number out of a hat, wrote it down. Your question is to find out how hard that number is. And of course, everybody else's job is to find out how hard your numbers are. So A, ask your way to success. Ask your way to success. Asking is the key to the future. Don't be afraid to ask. Ask for lower prices. If you're buying, ask for higher prices. If you're selling, ask for a higher salary. If you're starting a job, ask for increases. Ask for orders. Ask for business. Ask for meetings and appointments. Ask for follow-up meetings and appointments. Ask for resales and referrals. Don't be afraid to ask. If you ask, what can the person say? The person could say no. So therefore, you're in exactly the situation that you were a few seconds ago. A few seconds ago, you had nothing. You asked. They said no. You have nothing again. Nothing has changed. But you've asked. And it is absolutely amazing how many people don't buy because they say, well, he just didn't ask. Sat here, talked, smiled, showed me his price list, demonstrated everything. I wanted it. I was interested in it, but they didn't ask. 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 Ask for what you want. Okay. B, fear of rejection holds people back. Now, the way that you overcome your fear of rejection is just ask. Make a habit of asking. Ask politely. Ask in a friendly way. Ask confidently. Ask cheerfully. Ask nicely. Ask warmly. Ask graciously. But ask. Ask. Don't be afraid to ask. The key to good negotiating is just to ask. And if you don't get that, ask for something else. If you want some negotiating lessons, look at young kids. They are so good. Catherine says, can I go to the store with you? No. Well, if I go to the store, I'll stay in the car. Okay, you get there. You wait in the car with whoever's in the car. And can I go in the store, please? No. Please let me go in the store. I just want to go. I just want to see the inside of the store. I haven't seen the inside of his store for 15 minutes. So we think, all right, let her come in the store. Can I have a toy? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? No. No, no, no. Can I have a toy? Can I please have a toy? Can I have a big toy? No. Can I have a little toy? No. Can I have two little toys? No. No, 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 no. Can I go look at the toys? All right, you can go look at the toys. She comes back with an armful of toys. Which of these toys can I have? No, 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 no. And then the parents start to look at you, the other parents. I was at a toy store with my son, and he was asking for something. I said, no, you can't have it. No. I said, that's ridiculous. You get lots of stuff. He gets lots of stuff. And I was just a little bit cross. I was a little bit, you know, and he said, no. Oh, well. And then this guy, I never will forget this guy. He was long-haired. He was poorly dressed. Nice young guy. He came up and he gave me $2. He said, get him the toy. I felt so rotten. I kept the $2. But those kids, I'll tell you, they don't have any problems with asking. Ask, 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 ask. They're like termites. Okay. Number two, the purpose of a negotiation in selling. When we are selling to our customers, remember it is the resale and the referral that is critical to our long-term success. You never want to ruin a relationship. You want to start a relationship with a negotiation, not end one. So the purpose of a negotiation is to reach an agreement. And to reach an agreement such that both parties are satisfied and willing to do business again. Both parties feel committed to it because both parties feel better off. There's a Chinese expression that says at the end of a good negotiation, both parties leave smiling because they both feel that they're better off than they were before they entered into the negotiation with the other person. A, seek for fairness and equity. I always use the word fair. It's one of the most powerful words in the English language. Well, let's do the fair thing, or that's really not a fair request, or what would be fair for you, or how do you think we should structure it so you feel that it's fair? The word fair is a tremendous word in negotiating. And again, it's a real word. It's an honest word, but never enter into a negotiation that you feel is not fair. Keep insisting on fairness. And sometimes people who are being excessive will cool down a bit when you point out to them how important it is to be fair. B, aim for win-win or no deal. Aim for win-win or no deal. In other words, both must be happy, both must be smiling, both must be satisfied, or no deal. I will not enter into a deal if you're not happy with this. If you're not happy with it, let's not do it at all. And sometimes, by the way, that will bring a negotiation back on track. And your job is never to take advantage of the other person. Always to seek win-win. Now, number three, power is a critical element in negotiating. When you're negotiating to buy a home, when you're negotiating to buy or sell a car, or buy or sell a home, power is very important. When you're in negotiations, and I've done multi-day negotiating sessions where basically an entire negotiating team, basically me and eight of them, is tied up in a room to negotiate a multi-million dollar, 62-page contract, and I've done this several times, and there are days and days of negotiating, going through the contract. I know all about negotiating. I've negotiated tens of millions of dollars of complex contracts of all kinds in several different countries. And what I know is that sometimes you have to look at how you can develop power, which gives you an edge in a negotiation. These are not subtle or ulterior things. They're very powerful tools that you have to have. And here are the five forms of power. A is expertise. Expertise is superior knowledge of the subject. Do your homework. If you have really done your homework and you really know what's available and what people are paying and what the prices are and what has just happened in the marketplace, you have tremendous power as opposed to the person who's been too rushed and who doesn't understand the marketplace that well. I was in a negotiation with a shopping center once with a Safeway. They were going to be the anchor tenant in the shopping center. If I got them, I could build the shopping center because I could get the financing. Not only that, I could get all the other tenants because they were going to be the biggest tenant in town. And they presented me with a contract, and they said, here's our standard contract. And this is the only one we work with. If this is acceptable to you, then we can go ahead. If not, then we'll just do something else. And I needed them desperately. They had power, huge power. As it happened, I happened to know someone who knew someone who had built a shopping center and rented a Safeway to them recently. And I went to them, and through my channels, I got a copy of the lease that they had finally agreed to. The terms were totally different. Safeway had caved in several critical areas that if they had not been modified, would have, in the long term, been very harmful. So I went back to them and I said, these terms won't work for us based on my numbers. We need to change them. They told me and they swore they had never deviated from this contract. This was the only contract. This would cashier the deal. This was over. It was finished. But I knew they had just entered into another agreement for a similar shopping center with another developer. And so I never told them that, but I knew. And by the time the dust had settled, I had gotten my new agreement completely parallel with their new agreement with the other shopping center. It had made the shopping center a great success, and it even made me a little bit. But superior knowledge is a critical form of power. Whenever you're going to negotiate with someone, get as much knowledge as you can about the deal. B, knowledge of needs of the other. How do you find about needs of the other? Well, one of the ways is research. Find out what the person's really after. What are they negotiating for? What are they trying to accomplish? And ask them. Asking them what their needs are and what I would say, what would you ideally like to get out of this contract? What would you ideally like to get out of this negotiation? And what would be the ideal outcome of this discussion from your point of view? And often they'll tell you exactly what they want. I've had situations where they have said, well, this would be our ideal outcome. And I've said, well, based on that, I think that if you can satisfy us here, we can make that work for you, which will satisfy your requirements. We don't have to spend days doing this. And we've come out with very big and very satisfactory negotiations. Don't be afraid to ask. C, another form of power is identification. Identification is liking. Is if the person identifies with you and likes you, then they're much more amenable to your suggestions in terms of negotiating or getting better terms. And here are the words that you use. Whenever they say something that's difficult, you say, you know, I understand how you feel. I understand how you feel. These are some of the most important words that you can learn in getting along with other human beings. If a person is upset or demands something, we demand this. Well, I understand how you feel and how that might be important to you. Is there some other way that we could go about it? I understand how you feel relaxes the person and makes them feel that they're recognized, that they're okay, that they're safe. Be a nice person. Say, look, we want to do the fair thing here. We want to come to an agreement that you're happy with. I negotiated a 5-year, multinational, multi-million dollar deal with somebody recently, and I repeated this mantra, and it finally sunk in, is we want to enter into an agreement that you're comfortable with. You tell me if there's anything in this agreement that you're not comfortable with, and we'll massage it, because I want you to be comfortable. I want you to be happy with this agreement. And we went from a long way apart with lawyers and everything else to a very acceptable agreement that has not had a wrinkle in several years, because my emphasis was, I want you to be comfortable with whatever we agree on. Because then the person sort of feels, well, I don't need to be a jerk here if this person has made it clear that they're going to do whatever is necessary to make me comfortable. And by the way, by insisting that they're comfortable, they will, surprise, surprise, insist that you be comfortable as well. Or you can say, you know, based on that, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. I want you to be comfortable, but I'm not comfortable with that. Comfortable is a good word. Comfort is a good word. D is rewarding and punishing, which is called carrot and stick. Make it clear that the person knows how much they can gain by dealing with you, by entering into this agreement. Also, make it clear how much they're likely to lose if they don't. If they get this, they'll get exactly the one they want in the color, in the style, in the model, delivered within 72 hours. If they don't, they may not get what they want. It may cost more. It may take several weeks to get it. In other words, what you will gain, what you will lose. The reward versus the punishment. Be very gentle. Emphasize very strongly the rewards. Very gently the detriments to not going ahead. Don't beat people up with it. And E is investment. Investment of time, investment of money, investment of emotion on either party increases power. If you have really put a lot into making this work, then the other person to a certain degree has more power than you do, because you've got more on the table than they do. It's called hurting money. You're going to hurt more if it doesn't come off. And sometimes a person's reputation in their company hangs on them getting a deal. And if the person negotiating with you knows you have to get this deal or you're going to have to answer to your superiors, then they can always get a better deal. So even if you put in a lot of time, money, and emotion, be cool. Be cool. We'll come back to this in a second. I'll give you what I consider to be one of the best negotiating tactics that there is. Number 4 is emotions can help you or hurt you in negotiating. They can help you or hurt you in negotiating. Desire. Is how badly you want it. It's the critical element. If you really, 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 really want it, woo, 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 you've got to have it, your ability to negotiate is pretty poor. So therefore, the very best negotiators are kind of passive. I used to teach negotiating in the graduate faculty at the university in labor management relations. It was a critical part of the MBA program. So what we did is I would have a team, and I would show them how to negotiate with another team, which was the labor team. We were management, they were labor. And I would have my team just plan and prepare to be perfectly passive when they went into the discussions. And we were lined up on opposite sides of the table like a real negotiation with exercises. And we would come in and we would sit down and we would sit there and there'd be no emotion. Now, these are all people that we knew. It was an exercise. And their friends, you know, and so on. But in the negotiation, there's no emotion, no friendliness, nothing. Passive, blank, dead, ice water in your veins. And we would negotiate, and we would be very polite and defer back and forth, and we would absolutely refuse to accept their terms, and we would say they're completely impossible, and then we'd go back and we have compromise, and we'd say, well, let us talk about it, and we would get up impassively and walk out, all 5 of us. And we discuss it outside. We go back in completely impassively. In every case, we won, hands down, in getting a vastly better deal for our side than for their side. Why? And they told us afterwards. They said it was so unnerving. We had no idea where you were coming from, what you would accept, what you wouldn't accept. So passivity is important. If you look like you really want it, or if you get emotionally involved in it, you lose your power. B is, how badly do you want it? How badly does he or she want it? No matter how badly you want it, appear indifferent. Appear indifferent. Well, you know, we like it. It looks pretty good. We've looked at several others. It's sort of, you know, it's in the short list of our preferences, but no big passion, even though your wife has said, if you don't come home with it, don't come home, you know. C is, emotional involvement reduces power. The Chinese tell an interesting story, because in China, the jade is almost a sacred stone. It's considered luck, fertility, long life, health, and things made of jade are very, very important in the Chinese culture. And throughout the years, wealthy Chinese purchased jade. Everybody purchases pieces of jade. And so the jade merchants were very adept, because the Chinese, of course, have the capacity to be totally stone-faced, no matter how excited they are. So what the jade merchants would do is they would cover all the pieces of jade, and they would then show one piece at a time. But as they showed the piece, they would look up and watch the face of the person who they were negotiating with. And if they showed a piece that the person really liked, their eyeballs would dilate like that. And the jade merchant, also totally impassive, talk about tough negotiating, totally impassive, would then show the next piece. And as he showed the piece, the person's eyes would go down, his eyes would go to the eyes and watch. If the eyes didn't move, he'd keep going until he knew which piece or pieces the person really liked. And those were the pieces that were then brought back, and those were the ones he could negotiate the strongest with. Very interesting. Very interesting. So just watch. Just watch. Okay, number five. Number five in negotiating is time can be a critical element in negotiating. Time can be a critical element. It can work for you or against you. And again, you have to give this a lot of thought. The more pressing the need, the less effective the negotiator. So even if you need something desperately, don't make it appear that you do. That's why the Japanese are famous. When a person comes over to negotiate with them, the first thing they do is they pick up their airplane tickets and say, let us take care of all the arrangements for you. Then they look at when you have to leave. And then they stall the negotiations until the day you have to leave. And you end up often negotiating in the taxi on the way to the airport with them and settling for anything because your plane is leaving. And so it's a very interesting technique. Find out what sort of time parameters do we have here. Ask, find out. When do you have to make a decision? When do you want to make a decision? If the person has time pressures, I learned a very interesting thing. When we were buying a house, we needed a mortgage of about $500,000. This was some years ago. And we went around, and we were new in California, and you might as well have been from outer space, because no credit rating anywhere in the world means anything if you're new. So we were new, and we went from mortgage company to bank to mortgage company. We couldn't get a mortgage. And then in the last half of December, everything started to come together. Scramble, documents, notarizations, proofs, tests, evaluations, and everything. And the negotiation, the final document was signed on December 31st at 5 in the afternoon. I learned later why. It's because there was a rush on for quota. And it was one-year quota, and bonuses were being awarded to the senior people based on the amount of financing they'd written that year, and now they had to get this done. And $500,000 was a hefty chunk of change. When is the best time to buy a car? It's usually in the last week of the month, because that's when quota. People want to make quota, and they want to get their quota by the end of the month. Almost all products can be purchased better in the last week of the month than anywhere during the month, especially the first week. First week, hey, they've got a whole month ahead of them. No need to negotiate. So find out, what are the time constraints? Are you on a quota? And what is your quota period? Oh, good. Now you come back on the last day of your quota and let's talk seriously. B is deadlines. Set deadlines wherever possible. Set deadlines wherever possible. Avoid deadlines wherever possible. Here's a gambit that's very simple. I learned it with my kids. If they say, I've got to have an answer right now, you say, then if you have to have an answer right now, then the answer is no. Oh. Oh, all right. Well, then I can wait for an answer. In other words, don't let yourself get boxed in by somebody else's deadline. Delay, put off decisions whenever you can. One of the rules for timing is what I call a 24-hour fuse. A deal that seems perfect today, you should always say, well, I need to think about it for 24 hours. Or I need to discuss it with someone and I won't be able to talk to him until tomorrow. A deal that seems perfect at this moment in every respect is vastly improved by letting it steep for 24 hours. The best of all is 72 hours, a long weekend. If you can buy yourself 24 hours to 72 hours to think about it, the decision you make then will be vastly superior to a decision you might make on the spur of the moment. So always buy time whenever you can. Say, I'd love to do it, but I have to check it with someone else and I won't be able to give you an answer until next week. But your answer will always be much better. Okay, number six is developing options improves your position. Developing options improves your position. The more alternatives you have, the stronger you are. This, by the way, is one of my philosophies of life, is that the business of life is to develop options. The business of your life is to develop options. So as soon as you have one option, develop another. As soon as you have two, develop three. You should never, as they say, a great life, like a great ship, should never be hung by a single hope or by a single rope. In other words, your life should have options. You should, if you're in a job today, your skill level should be so high you could walk to another job tomorrow. You should never be boxed in anywhere. If you want to buy something, find out what else is available and always think in terms of, if I didn't do this, I could do that. Always have options. People with options are free. People without options are trapped. So the more alternatives you have, the stronger you are. B, you are only as free as your options. You're only as free as your options. That's why it's so important to have a lot of customers going, a lot of prospects going, rather than having just one big prospect. That's why I'm so important to continue upgrading your skills in a time of rapid change. So there's lots of things you could do if you had to stop doing what you're doing today. Seven, know exactly what you want. This goes back to what we talked about earlier. That's my favorite word in success is the word clarity. Clarity. Know exactly what you want. Think it through. Take the time to be absolutely crystal clear. The person who is crystal clear always has an advantage in a negotiation over the person who's not sure. A, what outcomes do you desire? Ask yourself, if you could get the perfect outcome, what would it be? Think it through. If it's a big negotiation, discuss it with others. I did a major negotiation, a huge negotiation recently, and I spent several hours discussing it with the president of my company, all the ramifications, what they would want, what we would want, what they would ask for, what we would settle for, where we wanted to be, what would be the ideal outcome. And when we sat down with them, there were three of them and two of us, they brought in a stack of papers. Each one of them had a stack, a working stack, all written up, marked, stick-on noted. They had been through this exercise exhaustively for hours, exactly what we had done. But fortunately, we were completely prepared. And we came out with an agreement that left both people smiling. But it was because we had both taken the time to really think through the ideal outcome. B, what are you prepared to give in order to get what it is you really want? What are you prepared to give? Think about that. Sometimes people go into a negotiation, they don't even think about what they're prepared to give. Eight, and this is perhaps the most important of all, eight is preparation. Preparation is the mark of the professional. Preparation, in my estimation, is 80% or more of a successful negotiation. 80% or more of a successful sale. Preparation is the mark of the pro. Though you cannot prepare too much, the word is always over-prepare. When in doubt, prepare a little bit more. And prepare a little bit more besides. And prepare a little bit more. You cannot be over-prepared. I've worked with people who will go over and over and over something. I'll give you a perfect example. I know Jack Kemp. I like Jack Kemp. He's an interesting guy. Jack Kemp did not prepare for the debate with Al Gore and finished his prospects as a presidential candidate. He was out of the running as of that hour. He was told, because he's, God bless him, he's a loose cannon. He was told, you must prepare because Gore will prepare. Gore is not a good debater. He's not colorful, but he does his homework and he prepares. And Gore was ready. like a bear trap. And Kemp came off the campaign trail and, you know, met some friends at the hotel and went over for the debate with a few handfuls of notes and got just chewed up and spit out. The Economist of London said it was an embarrassing performance that ruined Kemp's chances for high political office in America because of the failure to prepare. He knew weeks in advance this was his moment, and he blew it. Preparation is really important. Okay, A, what are yours, what are his or her major concerns? What are the major concerns here? Think on paper. This is the great rule in negotiating. If it's important enough, think on paper. Write down everything that you can think of that might be a major concern for the other person. Write down your major concerns. Write down what you want to accomplish. Write down what they might want to accomplish. B, what are the issues to be resolved? What are the issues to be resolved? Money issues, timing issues, responsibility issues, payment issues, interest rate issues, penalty issues. What are the issues to be resolved? C, what are the starting positions of each party? Sometimes the starting positions are diametrically opposed. Union comes in and demands a 3-time pay increase with 8 hours less per week and increased benefits, pensions, and medical, and absolutely no cuts anywhere. Well, it's a preposterous position. But it's based on the old thing that the management will come in, offer half pay for an 80-hour week, and cut all medical and benefits. Now, those where they start off. All right, now what we do is get up, walk out, scream, shout, go to the newspapers, come in at later on, and let's start to work toward the center. But what are the positions? You could even call them up and ask them, basically, where do you want to be in each of these areas? And sometimes they'll tell you. And sometimes they'll be reasonable, and sometimes they'll be unreasonable. D, what are your maximums? What are your minimums? What's the most that you will pay? What's the least that you will pay? What's the most that you will go for? What's the least that you will go for? I negotiated a multi-million-dollar contract with the Japanese. They offered a 3-year contract. We demanded a minimum of 5. We ended up with 4. I would have preferred 5. They would have preferred 3. But 4 was worth another $10 million. It was okay. And as it turned out, that was a major decision because the first 3 years were building years. The 4th year was when the harvest came in. And so we had control of the importation and everything else. So what are the maximums, what are the minimums, and where can you saw off? Number 9, the law of 4. Now, the law of 4 is very interesting. It says that the number of issues to be negotiated is basically not more than 4. And the issues are like this: 1 big issue and 3 small issues. 2, 3, and 4. How does a negotiation take place? Well, both people have the same 4 issues, but they have them in different order of value. So the other person has 2 and 1, 3, 4. If both of them have the same issue as the major issue, then you can reach a standoff where you're not successful. So therefore, let us say you're buying a house. What are the major issues? Price, terms, occupation, and what's included in, and maybe even secondary financing. You know, 4 major issues. So the other person's major concern is terms, price, secondary financing, and date of occupancy. So what you do is you have to go back and you have to find a way to rectify these 4 issues. I have dealt with 50 and 60 page contracts, negotiation contracts with maybe 10 clauses to be negotiated on each page. And after 2, 3, 4, 5 days locked in a hotel room, going back and forth, it's come down to 4 issues. In fact, it starts with 4 issues, and after 5 days, it's still 4 issues. There may be 150 issues, and 146 are resolved. The last 4 are the ones that count, and the last major one. I did a major negotiation with a town. It was over $3 million in off-site development costs. They wanted $3 million. They had committed to the town council they were going to get $3 million. They were determined to get $3 million from us. We didn't have $3 million, and yet we knew that this was their big issue. But my big issue was terms. Their big issue was amount. So what we did is we agreed. Finally, and I saved it for the last, we agreed, we caved on this. On one understanding, is that we can pay you the amounts as we sell the lots, not in a lump sum in advance. Well, okay, that's reasonable because they wouldn't need the off-site services from the town until the lots were sold and occupied. So we then slapped on the additional price per lot to the homeowners who bought the lots, and agreed to pay them the amount, and when we got it, we transferred it straight across. They got their number, we got our terms, we had a deal. 150 clauses, 62 pages, and still to this day, they're clapping themselves on the back, and I had that worked out before we went in on the Monday morning, that this is where we would be on Friday afternoon. Besides, they all wanted to go home on Friday afternoon because it was the end of the week and they wanted to go home with their families, so we signed this at 4:30. I waited until 4 o'clock and I said, I think there's a way we can make this work. And everybody that walked out of the room smiling. They're still smiling today. God bless them. Number 10, simple negotiating tactics. Simple negotiating tactics. Here they are. A is the flinch. The flinch is very common. It's no matter what price the person gives you, you flinch. You go, ooh, jeez. Like you've just been impaled with a spear or punched in the solar plexus. Doesn't matter what the price is. How much is it? It's $2.95. Jeez. Jeez, can I get a glass of water? God. Often, if the price is soft, the price will drop with a flinch. A good flinch will give you a price drop of 20 to 50%. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And you just look with shock as if, et tu, Brute, could you have put this knife so deeply in me, this amount? Now, B is another tactic that you can use, is called the question. You say, is that the best you can do? Is that the best you can do? Is that the very best you can do? As if you're astonished. As if the price they gave you somehow got garbled in transmission. You didn't hear the words. Is that the best you can do? And if you do this in combination, ooh, geez, is that the best you can do? If the price is soft, it collapses very quickly. Now, if somebody does this to you, you say, nice flinch. Good. Did you get that from Brian's course? Okay. Now, C is assertion. Assertion is, I can get it much cheaper somewhere else. You see, this is a part of homework. I can get it much cheaper somewhere else. I remember I was buying something, I forget what it was, and I'd done my homework and I found that it was for sale at another place cheaper, but it was a different color, size, and shape. The one I wanted was this. The color was that they had, I didn't want, but it was much cheaper, although it was the identical product, just the different features. So I said to them, I can get it much cheaper somewhere else. That's not true. With this, yes, I can. I know I can. I've already checked the market. Where can you tell me where you can get it cheaper? I said, get it cheaper from ABC Company. Well, that's not possible. I went and phoned ABC Company, came back. You're right. They're willing to sell it cheaper than we do. Okay, we'll match their price. So I saved, I don't know, $2,000 or $3,000. I don't even remember what the amount was. But because I'd done my homework, I didn't want what the ABC Company had. I wanted what this company had. Because I'd done my homework, I was able to get it. So always say, I can get it cheaper somewhere else. That decimates people. I can get something better, cheaper somewhere else. What? Who? What? Who? Ha? Who? What? Now, try a combination. Who? Is that the best you can do? I can get it cheaper somewhere else. I mean, that's like punching with a punching ball. Now, D is lowball. D is lowball. That's where you offer a lowball price. Sometimes offer half price. Offer a dramatically lower price, and if possible, give reasons for the price. Your reasons can be personal. I was only expecting to pay this amount, which is less than the half price, but I'm willing to go even higher to get this, but I can't go all that way. In other words, if you give any kind of a reason, the person may accept or reject their reasons. I have a friend in Phoenix. He's a millionaire. He's not very smart. He doesn't have two brains to rattle together. But he took a course on buying real estate with no money down, and he learned a technique in which it was called lowball with a motivated buyer. And he finds that there's always buyers who own the house outright or own most of it and want to sell it immediately and they don't care. So he goes out, and wherever there's a house for sale, he goes up to the door and he said, how much are you asking? And most people ask about 110% of what they hope to get. Okay. And whatever it was, let's say the person's asking $100,000. He'd say, I'll give you $50,000 cash right now, no questions asked. Well, he gets a lot of abuse. He gets sprinklers turned on him and dogs sicked on him. He gets people swearing at him too, and he gets doors slammed in his face. But he buys one house out of 100 is his number. Because after going around, dutifully he walks 10, 15 houses a day, he finds somebody who's highly motivated. The parents died. The kids are out here from the east. They've got to sell the house. Somebody's just been fired from their job, and or they're going through a divorce, a bankruptcy, something else. Got to get rid of the house. I'll give you $50,000. Sometimes people actually have to put in money to get free of the house to keep their credit rating clear. And then what he does, he goes down to the bank and he rents the house at just below market rentals. And he's always advertising for clients who would like beautiful houses just below market rentals. So he always gets the cream of the rental. If a house like this would sell rent for $500 a month, he rents it for $480. And so he's got people who want the house. He moves them into the house at $480 a month. He takes and goes down to the bank, and now he's got someone who pays all the payments. He finances the house for $80,000, 80% of the value. And he takes the extra $30,000. He does some landscaping, some painting, some carpets. Takes him $5,000 or $10,000. Got a beautiful house, moves the tenant in. The tenant makes all the payments. He walks away with about $10,000, $20,000 in his pocket. All the payments are made by the tenant. He's on to the next house. He's a millionaire today. Sounds like a simple way of buying things? Well, it's not simple for him, just half price. But of course, you're going to get a lot of abuse. And whatever they say, you flinch. Jeez, I can get houses cheaper than that. Oh, okay. So E is silence. Silence is involved with patience. And what it means is this, is when a person gives you the price, don't say anything, like the Chinese jade merchant. Just be completely passive. Just don't say anything. Don't respond. Just go dead. You know, like they just unplugged you. And they say, well, what do you think of that? I say, I don't think anything of it. I just can't respond. Well, do you think it's a good price? I just don't know what to say. I have watched people just do this. Or the temperature comes down like a thermometer on a cool day. The price comes down as they sit there silently. Well, how about 720? How about 7? How about 690? 680? 640? 650? I mean, and the silence is unnerving, especially if the price is too high. And at a certain point, you lighten up again. So silence is very powerful. And I can tell you all kinds of negotiations that are just wonderful. F is the nibble. The nibble is the add-on. Once you've agreed to the deal, everything's done, you're about to sign it, you say, oh, by the way, you will throw in one of these, won't you? Or this will include one of those and two of those, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. Then you take the pen, you say, oh, well, the heck with it then. The heck with it then. If you're willing to throw this whole deal away, if you're willing to throw the whole damn thing away for a crummy delivery or a free trip to Acapulco, well, you can have it. Lots of other people are willing to throw in this and willing to throw in that. I've seen people, this guy that buys houses, he often gets them to throw in the car. He said, well, of course, that includes the car and the garage. Well, they hadn't thought about the car and the garage because it didn't belong to them anyway. He knows why they're selling the house. And they said, well, no, that doesn't, well, okay, forget it then. I mean, there's no point in my buying the house if I'm not getting the car. And of course, you'll be leaving the drapes and the kitchen appliances. I mean, there's no point in getting rid of those. I mean, they're worth anything anyway. I mean, he just goes like this. It's unbelievable. All they just want to do is catch the plane back to Ohio. They want to get out of here. He ends up with half the house, most of the lawn equipment, you know, two or three. Okay, number 11 is the walk-away method of negotiating. The walk-away is what I was mentioning earlier. It's one of the most powerful of all negotiating techniques, is after you've negotiated, perfectly passive, gone through the flinch, and gone through the various reactions and the dead silence, be prepared to get up and walk away. You never know the final price till you're willing to walk away. You never know how low they will go till you walk away. You can save as much as you could earn in a year after cost of living by just negotiating well, by walking away. Sometimes the price will drop 5, 10, 15, 20. One case, I got a $30,000 drop from walking away on a house. $30,000, that's in my pocket rather than in their pocket. That's worth walking away. The person says, well, what if you walk away and they don't come after you? Go back. It's only a game. It's only a game. In the Israeli Knesset, they had a situation recently where the opposing party got up and walked out of the Knesset. And they said, well, I guess this means that the coalition is over. He said, no, no. He said, getting up and walking and stomping out is just a form of negotiating. Just get up, stomp out. If it doesn't work, come back in. And leave somebody there. That's another trick. Leave somebody there, get up, walk out, and they'll say, look, let me talk to him. Let me talk to her. She's very volatile. Let me talk to her. I go, okay, I think, well, I'll come back. I think we can do the deal, but you know, you're going to have to bend here or she's going to leave. I mean, she's getting in her car now. So now you're the good guy. You see what I'm talking about? Just think about it. It saves a lot of money. And number 12, remember this, no negotiation is ever final. No negotiation is ever final. With new information, ask to reopen the negotiation. If you learn something new that changes what you've agreed to in the past, go back and say, I'm not happy with this. Based on what I found out, I think we should renegotiate. And B, both parties should be happy. I will tell you this, Mark McCormick is a really great guy. Mark's one of the best negotiators in the world, owns sports marketing group and a whole lot of other things worth several $100 million. And Mark said that he has never held a person to a contract who wanted out, and it's never hurt his career. Any person, and I've done the same thing. Anybody who's ever come to me and said, I want out of this contract, I've let them out. It'll never hurt you. If they say, based on my situation, based on everything now, I want out, let them go. It'll always come back to your benefit. Never hold a person's feet to the fire. Never get the last pound of flesh. Always be willing to let people go if they're not happy with the contract, and it'll always inure to your benefit.
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next CD.